When Tucker Carlson's Fox News show abruptly ended on April 24, 2023, the announcement sent shockwaves through American media. For millions of viewers, his nightly broadcast had become a ritual, a source of comfort in what they perceived as an increasingly hostile cultural landscape. While conservatives mourned, progressives celebrated what they saw as a long-overdue deplatforming of a dangerous voice. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez triumphantly declared that deplatforming works, while Pentagon officials expressed delight at his removal. Whatever the cause, whether his opposition to American involvement in Ukraine, vulgar messages about Fox executives revealed in the Dominion lawsuit, or Rupert Murdoch's discomfort with his religiosity, one thing was clear. Tucker Carlson had become the most polarizing figure in American media, with a following so devoted that Fox News immediately lost nearly $1 billion in stock value upon his departure. Within days, his first Twitter video garnered 55 million views, three times his typical Fox audience, suggesting his influence might actually grow beyond the constraints of cable television. Tucker Carlson's path to becoming the voice of conservative America is filled with contradictions. Born into San Francisco's elite society on May 16, 1969, his early life was marked by family fracture when his mother Lisa abandoned the family when he was just 6 years old. His father Dick, an award-winning journalist who later served in the Reagan administration, gained custody of Tucker and his brother Buckley, later marrying Patricia Swanson of the frozen food empire. This childhood trauma of maternal abandonment profoundly shaped Tucker's passionate advocacy for traditional family structures. At speaking engagements, he frequently declares that family is the only true source of meaning in human existence, condemning corporate America's promotion of career over family. At the Family Leadership Summit, he criticized companies like Citibank and Nike for paying female employees to have abortions, interpreting this as corporations telling women it's more important to serve us than to have a family, a message he calls a grotesque and obvious lie. Despite his elite upbringing, Tucker struggled academically due to dyslexia and learning difficulties, describing himself as a total loser who earned mostly D's from third grade until college graduation. However, like his father, he was an avid reader, finishing War and Peace before age 10 and developing a particular love for Russian literature. This contradiction between academic underperformance and intellectual curiosity would become a hallmark of his career. A Harvard-educated elite who positions himself against the elite establishment. Tucker's father's unconventional parenting emphasized independence, once sending young Tucker to hitchhike home alone after wilderness camp rather than picking him up, explaining, "Why would he prevent you from having a life-changing experience with hitchhiking?" These experiences fostered the self-reliance and skepticism of authority that would later define his media persona. At St. George's School, an exclusive Episcopalian boarding school in Rhode Island, Tucker established his reputation as a charming provocateur who loved debate regardless of ideological position. Former classmate Keller Kimbrough recalls him as articulate and smart and a real bullshitter who would argue any side of a debate with flair. It was here that Tucker met his future wife, Susie Andrews, the headmaster's daughter, falling for her immediately despite her parents' disapproval of him as a shit-stirrer. Their relationship persisted through college despite her parents' explicit prohibition, with Susie secretly visiting him at Trinity while she attended Vanderbilt. Their eventual marriage would become a cornerstone of Tucker's life, a relationship characterized by mutual respect and independence. Tucker admires Susie's self-determination, saying, "You can't tell my wife what to do," and noting she's gone 54 years without doing anything you don't want to do. At Trinity College, Tucker's political awakening began to take shape. During the summer after his freshman year, he and roommate Neil Patel spent 2 months in Nicaragua during the Contra War, working for the opposition newspaper La Prensa through connections from Tucker's father. Unlike most young American visitors who were leftist Sandinista supporters, the conservative pair were marked by the government as opposition sympathizers. This experience taught Tucker that the closer you get to something, the more confusing it tends to become, noting the blurring distinctions between supposed good and bad actors. This skepticism towards simple political narratives would become a defining feature of his later commentary, particularly his opposition to American interventionism abroad. Despite being listed in Trinity's class of 1992, Tucker never formally graduated, lacking sufficient credits, a fact that remains of complete unconcern to his father Dick, who remarks, "I guess it hasn't made much of a difference." Instead of attending graduation, Tucker and Susie rented graduation gowns from a drugstore in Potsdam, New York, and took mock graduation photos, eager to start their real life together. Tucker's journalism career began at Policy Review, the Heritage Foundation's quarterly publication, where he earned just $14,000 annually. Beyond fact-checking, he appointed himself nutmail editor, sometimes baiting conspiracy theorists with humorous responses. His first significant article was a 9,000-word piece on closing down crack houses, which involved interviewing drug addicts and following community organizers through Philadelphia's blighted neighborhoods, demonstrating his talent for long-form journalism that would eventually earn recognition from mainstream publications. After a stint at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette in Little Rock, where he observed the stratified society that produced the Clintons, Tucker joined Rupert Murdoch's newly launched Weekly Standard in 1995. There, he developed his distinctive writing persona, a jaunty nuisance thrown into absurd and incredible situations with a gonzo style reminiscent of Hunter S. Thompson, whom Tucker had admired since youth. Tucker's television career began almost accidentally in 1995, when CBS's 48 Hours needed a commentator for the O.J. Simpson trial. Despite limited knowledge, he found himself on national television within hours. This led to opportunities at CNN, where he co-hosted The Spin Room with Bill Press before joining the iconic debate show Crossfire. The infamous end of his CNN tenure came when Jon Stewart ambushed the Crossfire hosts, accusing them of partisan hackery and hurting America. Though Tucker held his own in the exchange, calling out Stewart's own softball interview with John Kerry, the damage was done. Months later, Crossfire was canceled after a 22-year run, with CNN president Jonathan Klein citing agreement with Stewart's criticism. After a brief stint at MSNBC hosting The Situation with Tucker Carlson, where he notably introduced Rachel Maddow to television audiences, Carlson joined Fox News as a contributor in May 2009 on his 40th birthday. During this transitional period, Tucker and college roommate Neil Patel conceived The Daily Caller, which would become a significant conservative news outlet with 15 to 20 million visitors monthly. Tucker Carlson Tonight premiered on November 14, 2016, with 3.7 million viewers, making it Fox's most-watched telecast in the 7 p.m. slot that year. Within 2 months, the show moved to 9 p.m., replacing Megyn Kelly's slot. When Bill O'Reilly was forced out in April 2017 following sexual harassment settlements, Carlson took over the prime 8 p.m. position. The show's success stemmed from Tucker's unique approach, combining intellectual depth with populist appeal. His executive producer, Justin Wells, a gay conservative who became a trusted partner despite initial mutual distrust, helped shape the show around Carlson's passions and strengths. Wells faced attacks from gay rights activists for working with Carlson, but remained a beloved member of the Carlson family. Tucker's immigration commentary generated particular controversy. In 2018, his comment about immigration making America dirtier triggered advertiser boycotts, but he refused to apologize and instead doubled down with evidence about environmental damage from illegal border crossings. 3 years later, another boycott erupted after Carlson discussed the Great Replacement, a deliberate effort to change America's racial mix and reduce the power of legacy Americans. The ADL demanded his firing, but Fox executive Lachlan Murdoch defended him. Perhaps most controversial was Tucker's repeated suggestion to send migrants to elite, predominantly white, liberal enclaves like Martha's Vineyard. when Florida Governor Ron DeSantis actually implemented this idea by flying 48 Venezuelan migrants to the island, residents quickly had the National Guard remove them within 48 hours, despite "All are welcome here" signs. The stunt validated Carlson's critiques of liberal hypocrisy, though it prompted Ken Burns to make Nazi comparisons and Governor Gavin Newsom to urge kidnapping charges. Tucker Carlson's relationship with Donald Trump exemplifies the nuanced reality behind media narratives of the Trump era. While Carlson openly criticized Trump's management style and certain policy decisions, he developed a genuine appreciation for Trump's personal qualities. In particular, Carlson found Trump to be an exceptionally engaging conversationalist, noting his ability to blend humor with sharp observations about people and politics. This dynamic was powerfully illustrated when protesters attacked the Carlson's home in 2018. Trump personally called Susie Carlson, offering not just support, but sharing a perspective that deeply resonated with her. "There's a lot of love in this world," words that became a source of comfort she would repeatedly return to. Despite acknowledging Trump's administrative shortcomings, including his sometimes chaotic management style and tendency to hire unsuitable advisors, Carlson maintains that Trump possessed unique insights in foreign policy that set him apart from the Washington establishment. He particularly praised Trump's assessment of China's economic threat, Japan's strategic importance, and his skepticism about U.S. involvement in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. These views, Carlson argues, demonstrated Trump's ability to see past conventional wisdom and identify core national interests. This measured perspective distinguished Carlson from both unwavering Trump supporters and categorical critics, highlighting his commitment to independent analysis. The COVID-19 pandemic period particularly demonstrated Carlson's willingness to break from partisan lines. In early 2020, he took the extraordinary step of traveling to Mar-a-Lago to personally warn Trump about the potential severity of the virus, even as many conservatives were downplaying its significance. His show was among the first to treat the pandemic as a serious threat, urging viewers to prepare for significant disruption. However, Carlson's position evolved as new data emerged. He became increasingly critical of what he saw as authoritarian overreach in pandemic response measures, questioning the scientific basis for lockdowns and challenging the suppression of alternative treatment options like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. His skepticism extended to vaccine mandates, which he viewed as an unprecedented intrusion into personal medical decisions. Throughout this period, Carlson maintained regular communication with Trump while preserving his editorial independence. He praised Trump's instincts on certain issues while criticizing decisions he disagreed with, such as the initial support for lockdowns. This complex dynamic exemplified Carlson's broader approach to political commentary, maintaining personal relationships while refusing to compromise his analytical independence, even when it meant challenging powerful figures within his own ideological camp. What truly distinguishes Tucker Carlson from other television personalities is his deep interest in culture beyond ideological combat, focusing on how physical, spiritual, and emotional environments nourish the human soul. He laments that nearly everything built after 1945 is less attractive and human-centered than earlier structures, criticizing how modern architecture diminishes people and destroys God's creation. He points to specific examples, like the contrast between grand railway stations of the early 20th century and the utilitarian concrete structures that replace them, arguing that earlier architects understood their role in uplifting the human spirit. For Tucker, aesthetics aren't trivial, but definitive of society's health. Noble ideologies produce beauty. Poisonous ideologies produce ugliness. He contrasts Soviet-era concrete boxes that sent the message, "You are worth nothing," with beauty that reminds you that the most important things are eternal. He frequently references European cathedrals and American civic buildings from the 19th century as examples of architecture that honored human dignity and spiritual aspiration, comparing them unfavorably with modern glass and steel structures he sees as soulless and dehumanizing. Tucker passionately celebrates nature, particularly trees, calling the eastern white pine the Mac Daddy badass of the forest. His appreciation extends beyond mere aesthetics to a deep ecological understanding, often discussing the intricate relationships between species in forest ecosystems. Though critics label him anti-environmental, he considers himself a complete environmental crazy person who distinguishes between what humans can and cannot control. He criticizes climate change discourse for distracting from immediate environmental problems like the red tide killing marine life near his Florida home and the destruction of local habitats through overdevelopment and pollution. This environmental consciousness connects to Tucker's broader spiritual outlook. Though not raised super religious, Tucker finds it idiotic that modern culture only believes in what can be measured, unlike every previous civilization that understood supernatural forces. He points to ancient wisdom traditions across cultures that recognize the sacred in nature and human experience. He laughs at human hubris. The decisions that matter are not ours. He argues evolutionary biology can't explain profound empathy or self-destructive impulses, suggesting these come from external spiritual forces. This perspective leads him to advocate for a more humble approach to human intervention in both natural and social systems, arguing that modern society's excessive faith in technological solutions and rational planning often creates more problems than it solves. His philosophical outlook emphasizes the importance of tradition, beauty, and spiritual awareness in creating meaningful lives and sustainable communities. He regularly connects these themes to practical policy discussions, arguing that a society's approach to architecture, urban planning, and environmental stewardship reflects its deeper values and assumptions about human nature and purpose. Tucker Carlson doesn't own a television in either of his homes, watching screens only when necessary for his show. He rejects much of modern technology, not for its mechanics, but for how it undermines authentic human connection. After attempting to watch HBO's The White Lotus, he found it unbearably sad, filled with horrible people in fake marriages that contradicted his core value of authenticity in relationships. He admires his wife Susie's old-fashioned habits, handwriting letters rather than using digital devices, making phone calls instead of texting, and reading books for hours daily. Tucker believes this lifestyle makes her way happier than those consumed by technology. Neither uses social media, with Susie avoiding it because of the hatred directed at her husband, while Tucker simply doesn't care what others think. This emphasis on authenticity extends to his professional relationships. Tucker despises flattery above all else, stating firmly, "I don't come from a flattery culture." Among his colleagues, he values affection and loyalty and love, but rejects sycophancy entirely. He distrusts bootlickers because someone who kisses ass doesn't respect himself, and someone who doesn't respect himself is a dangerous person. While Tucker may seem standoffish with autograph seekers, he eagerly engages with everyday Americans, giving his personal phone number to countless people he meets, from flight attendants to waiters. He maintains regular communication with approximately 400 people who text him news items and story ideas. These connections have yielded valuable content for his show and even personal friendships. Tucker Carlson deliberately cultivates a young male audience that mainstream culture often dismisses as suffering from toxic masculinity. He connects with this demographic through platforms like the Full Send podcast, which has millions of young male subscribers, and various digital platforms where young men congregate. His approach combines traditional conservative values with contemporary cultural critique, speaking directly to what he sees as a disenfranchised generation. Tucker's core message to young men is simple yet countercultural. Act on your instincts. They're always right. Don't let them degrade you. Tucker believes Western culture's assault on traditional masculinity has created a profound crisis for young men. From early childhood, boys are increasingly told their natural impulses are problematic or destructive, while girls are celebrated for embracing girl power and feminine attributes. This disparity begins in elementary school, where teaching methods often favor female learning styles and behavioral patterns. The consequences are stark and measurable. Boys start school 14% less prepared than girls, 2 million more women than men graduate college annually, and young men face rising rates of unemployment, depression, suicide, and drug overdoses. In workplace settings, traditionally masculine traits like competitiveness and assertiveness are frequently labeled as problematic. His Fox Nation documentary, The End of Men, addressed these concerns directly, warning that an increasingly feminized culture threatens societal collapse. The documentary explored declining testosterone levels, changing social norms, and the suppression of traditional male roles. While leftist outlets predictably mocked him, calling the documentary homoerotic and pseudoscience, Tucker's message resonates with young men across political lines, even among young Democrats, where his show ranked highest in viewership among news programs. On the Full Send podcast, Tucker expanded his critique of modern masculinity, particularly targeting what he sees as the emasculation of men in Western countries. He specifically criticized Canada's leadership, referring to Justin Trudeau as a weird cross-dressing prime minister, and argued that when a culture loses its masculine drive, people become bitches. This blunt language, while controversial, speaks directly to his target audience's frustrations. He also defended controversial figure Andrew Tate, praising his core message of self-respect and achievement, while suggesting that establishment opposition to Tate reveals their deeper agenda to prevent an independent, self-respecting population. Tucker argues that this opposition to traditional masculine values isn't just cultural, but institutional, pointing to educational systems, media representation, and corporate policies that he believes systematically undermine male confidence and achievement. His message consistently emphasizes personal responsibility, physical fitness, and the embrace of traditional masculine virtues like courage, strength, and leadership. Through various platforms, he encourages young men to reject what he calls the cult of victimhood and instead focus on self-improvement, financial independence, and building strong families. Tucker Carlson places immense value on friendship and laments how politics has increasingly severed lifelong bonds, particularly highlighting his painful falling out with longtime mentor PJ O'Rourke over Trump. Their relationship, which spanned decades and included countless shared experiences, professional collaborations, and personal milestones, ultimately fractured over political disagreements. Unlike many in today's media landscape, Tucker steadfastly refuses to end relationships over political differences, maintaining that friendship and human connection should transcend ideological divisions. He's been repeatedly shocked when liberal friends and colleagues, some dating back to his early career in journalism, have abruptly cut ties with him. These ruptures often occur without warning or discussion, leading Tucker to observe, "For a lot of people on the left, it is their religion, and this is a holy war, and they can't be friends with unbelievers." He notes how former dinner companions and wedding guests now treat him as persona non grata, demonstrating how political polarization has transformed once stable relationships into casualties of ideological warfare. Tucker is particularly disturbed by how politics divides families, witnessing numerous instances where parents and children stop speaking over political disagreements. He calls it evil by definition to divide children from their parents, which is what wokeness does by intention. He's observed multiple cases where college students return home indoctrinated with new beliefs that create unbridgeable gaps with their families. This familial dissolution, he argues, serves no one and damages society's fundamental building blocks. In response to this growing isolation, Tucker advocates for prioritizing tangible relationships over digital connections. He specifically advises people to cling more tightly to the things that you can smell: spouses, children, dogs, and in-person friendships. This emphasis on physical presence and genuine human connection extends to his own life choices, including limiting social media use and prioritizing face-to-face interactions. This perspective on human connection reflects Tucker's broader philosophical outlook, shaped by personal experiences with mortality. During breakfast, he recalls his near-death experience in a 2001 plane incident, admitting he felt regret rather than peace when facing possible death. This leads him to discuss a particularly moving 2019 cargo plane crash where pilot Conrad Oska's final recorded words were, "Lord, you now have my soul." Tucker finds this profound testament to faith and acceptance deeply moving, saying, "I want to be that man who faces death with such spiritual readiness." These brushes with mortality have reinforced his belief in prioritizing genuine human connections over ideological allegiances. 8 days after Fox News abruptly canceled his show, Tucker Carlson sat smoking a cigar in his Florida backyard, describing the aftermath as the busiest time in my entire life. The cancellation came without explanation during a phone call from Fox News CEO Suzanne Scott on April 24, 2023, ironically, the 6-year anniversary of his show moving to primetime. Tucker believes his firing was part of Fox's settlement with Dominion. They agreed to take me off the air as a condition of the Dominion settlement. Though disappointed by Fox's subsequent campaign of slanders against him, Tucker maintains he did nothing wrong and has told allies not to attack the network. With Fox's ratings plummeting in his absence, Tucker announced plans to launch a new venture on Twitter, what his executive producer Justin Wells describes as a multidimensional platform built around Carlson's distinctive sensibility. Tucker sees this as an opportunity to escape the constraints of cable news, which he believes has a limited future because it's too obviously controlled. In his Twitter announcement, Tucker explained his motivation. "You can't have a free society if people aren't allowed to say what they think is true." For millions of Americans who felt their views were represented nowhere else in mainstream media, this promise of an uncensored Tucker Carlson represents not just the continuation of a media career, but a defiant stand against what they perceive as an increasingly restrictive public discourse. Whether loved or loathed, Tucker Carlson has undeniably reshaped American media and political conversation, and his story appears far from over.